Brass Decks, good morning.
Yeah, David, how you doing?
I'm Dennis. I'm all right.
Dennis, how you doing?
I'm good.
All right, I think I have 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I'll deal with the Black Lives Matter issue first. What do you know about Juneteenth, Dennis?
Pretty much nothing.
All right, it is an African-American celebration of things black and black achievement. And I believe that the same way that we're in a hurry in Barbados to adopt foreign things like Halloween and Thanksgiving, here is something that is close to our heart because our diaspora celebrate this observance. Juneteenth. I'm not calling for it to be a holiday. I'm calling for it to be an observance in Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
It's June the 19th. Juneteenth is an important occasion and let us embrace it. That's one.
Hold on a second. What's the significance of Juneteenth?
You're celebrating black achievement and the aspirations of
What's the origin of Juneteenth?
Just like how the Americans celebrate the coming of the pilgrims with Thanksgiving.
Right.
Juneteenth was supposed to be a celebration after the slaves were freed.
In the United States.
The black way of celebrating
the emancipation in the U.S.?
Well, it was emancipation and other things. Because a lot of people don't know that a lot of inventions were done by black people.
Right. So, what I'm trying to do, sir.
Like, you name it, there's so many.
Sir. Sir, what I'm trying to do is to make June 19th significant to Barbados. And that's why I asked you the origins of it. I know there are several black inventors, and that's why I made a comment to someone online about teaching and learning the history outside of Eurocentric history, and I was told, yes, it's widened today, and you know, we learn other histories in school. The date, however, is significant to the United States, and I'm trying to figure out whether we would have the same attachment to that date, or whether there'd be another date that's significant to the Caribbean. That's the connection I was trying to make. Not that it doesn't celebrate.
Commemorate the emancipation of enslaved people in the U.S.
Correct.
The holiday was first celebrated in Texas.
Right.
There on a day of, in 1865, in the aftermath of the Civil War, slaves were declared free under the term of the 1862 Emancipation
Proclamation.
Proclamation. Right. So what I'm saying is that we can identify with that because we were free. The slaves in Barbados were free in 1834, but like everybody else, from the English side of slavery. So we can identify with that celebration of being, because we are supposed to be 92% black in Barbados, our population. What I'm saying is that we are in a rush to embrace something like Halloween. I'm sure that you will hear about Halloween parties in Barbados. That's something that's foreign to us. That does not really belong to us. Juneteenth, on the other hand, is a black celebration of black people and their freedom and their achievements. That is what Juneteenth is about.
But don't we have Emancipation Day celebrated in Barbados on a date already?
We do, and unfortunately it is not on as big a scale as I would like.
So?
I'm sure you live in Trinidad. You know about Indian Arrival Day. And you also know
African Arrival Day.
African Arrival Day.
All sorts of arrival days.
It's a huge thing in Trinidad. I lived there for 2 years when I was studying law. And I'm seeing that it was great to see Trinidadians dressed in African garb and parading through the streets, and it was a huge celebration. All peaceful, all full of pride and pomp and circumstance. Mm-hmm. Why aren't we having that in Barbados? Why is emancipation there? Is it because it falls so close to crop over? Are they both of them coincide when it comes to Kaduma Day? Why can't we have, instead of just having an emancipation walk from the bust statue, we should have a big celebration, something on par or close to what happens in Trinidad.
So what stops us doing it, huh?
I believe it.
We have, you see.
The political will and the will of those who say that they were about black consciousness. Okay. I don't want to call names because apparently when they get political picks or political appointments, all these things seem to go through the window for them.
Well,
but
let me,
I believe you should be leading the charge, and you have more of black consciousness and black unity.
But sir, let me walk you through this carefully, right? Because it's one part of the year that I used to spend a lot of time in front of this microphone and talking to everybody involved in culture Barbados. The period of emancipation coincides with the crop over period in Barbados. There's the Day of National Significance in July.
Mm-hmm.
There's Emancipation Day. So the whole period is a period of the celebration of the history of Barbados from colonization to the sugar crop, to the end of the sugar crop, to the feeling of euphoria of the people with cash in my pocket and the country doing well and burn Mr. Hardin. So if you have a period where the history of Barbados and emancipation, Day of National Significance, commemorating the rats, and all that blended into a period, then what you need to do is educate the people and work to make that celebration as big as Indian Arrival Day or African Arrival Day or Shout a Baptist Day or Native Peoples Day and all the other days that are celebrated, rather than saying you're not celebrating Emancipation Day properly, so let's bring Juneteenth in because you have Halloween. I would like you to remove Halloween, as a matter of fact, because it at that point in the year, I remember, again, from living in another country, it wasn't about Halloween. It was about going to the cemetery and commemorating your dead ancestors, All Saints Day and All Souls Day for the Catholics. And I don't know where Halloween come from. I don't know where Thanksgiving come from either. As a matter of fact, as someone born in the island of Grenada, when I heard that they were celebrating Thanksgiving because Americans freed them from something or the other, I was horrified. But by then, you know, my psyche was so shattered that whatever they did didn't bother me. But my thing is this. If you keep looking to the United States or looking to Europe or looking to somewhere else to say, this is how the people there celebrate, why not join in the celebration? I don't think we are doing justice to our own indigenous people and our history, because there's a history in the Caribbean and certainly in Barbados that predates the arrival of the Europeans. And if we teach our people that there were people here, that there was interaction with Africa before the slave trade, and to discover what those interactions were, and to build a celebration around our indigenous dates, we may find greater buy-in from the diaspora and get them to come home for our celebration, rather than we go to the United States to celebrate Thanksgiving or Halloween because it makes money for merchants. To me, we are losing an opportunity to define who we are by saying, let's blend with a wider group of people. That's my only thing about it.
Well, I kind of differ with you there.
No problem.
My point is that we're outreaching to the diaspora. The diaspora celebrates Juneteenth.
Mm-hmm.
That is my only point about that. And I believe that. I'm saying that if we can copy all the negative influences, why not copy something that is positive? Copy something that our brothers and sisters who are in distant lands and probably United States or wherever celebrate. Because we are hoping that most of these people come back to Barbados to retire.
Correct.
And if you're going to have something that they are accustomed celebrating in there while they were overseas, and we can embrace that, I believe that we can also make it. Remember, I'm not asking for a holiday. I'm asking
for observance.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. That's my only point where that is concerned.
Okay.
Okay, my second point has to do with the removal of Darnell. And I'm not going to, in any way, shape, or form, try to defend the Minister of Culture. I heard what he said on the news this morning, and I actually agree in part with what he said. He says that, in essence, he was saying that you cannot create history by destroying history.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that if we're talking about removing Nelson and putting him in a naval museum or something like that, he's all for it, as opposed to destroying the statue and throwing it in the sea or whatever. That was, I think that was the essence of his point. And I agree. And I'm a student of history. Actually, history is my first degree. And I believe that the fact that it was a part of our history, that if somebody who's interested, whether you're a tourist, whether you're a school child or whatever, should be able to go somewhere on our country and see this statue and what it represented and whatever. It could even be at the Barbados Museum. I don't have no problem with that. But to have it in a place of prominence, I think that that is where the area of the conscious Barbadian is felt. If you have it in a place of prominence, like the top of Broad Street, I don't believe it has a place there in National Hero Square. It does not. And that, so there must be a distinction. The distinction is the removal as opposed to the destruction. That's the second point. The third point, I think,
Let me ask you this then. Having made that distinction, and having said that, you know, history is, you're a student of history. I like that comment, by the way. Mm-hmm. There are too few of them around. I like history too.
Mm-hmm.
The significance, therefore, of, you talked about the United States and Juneteenth. The mm-hmm. significance then of the thrust in the US, in the UK, in other places, to remove statues and to change names. Do you see it again as reactionary, a good thing, one of the things to follow, or one of the things not to, to emulate?
I believe that if it's part of your history, there should be a place for it. There's nothing wrong with having a hall of shame. I have other persons who are of that ilk
placed in the hall of shame.
Yeah, but you'll be surprised at how many tourists will pay a $5 or $2 US or $3 US to go and take pictures in the hall of shame.
Here's the thing, right? I think in Trinidad now they want to take down Columbus too. If you have a National Heroes Square where people can follow the history of their heroes, plaques on the bust or the statue, and you know your history. As you say, there is a place where you say, well, we started at that end and this is where we are now. And, you know, the people who want to go and stand on that end could stand on that end. But it comes back to a question of understanding history and historical data and how we react to it. The question I would ask is this: how relevant do you see statues to our way of life as a history student?
I see them as very important to the psyche of our people.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you something. My mom died 13 years ago, but I remember my first trip to Bridgetown. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that she showed me that stood in my mind was Lord Nelson. It was like a landmark. She mm-hmm. tells me, you're here, remember, walk straight down and you get to the Lord Green Bus thing. So after that, you know, on my own, I would know the way home. That was my first, I came from the country. That was my first visit to Bridgetown. Lord Nelson's statue was a landmark. It still is. So in my mind, I wanted to know about this statue. So I read up on the plaque at the bottom of the statue. And then when I became a student of history, I realized that apart from the Battle of Trafalgar, Lord Nelson really didn't care too much about Barbados. You know, I, like a caller said, he was one of the supporters of slavery. But that in mind, I'm saying, like someone like the Right Excellent Earl Walton Barrow, who didn't want statues to himself. Mm-hmm. But persons who want to know about, especially school children, who want to know about our history and about the way that we became independent, the fight of independence, and how difficult it was at the time when he decided to approach the English Parliament to have Barbados declared independent, and how there were white planters and other persons who actually left Barbados and went to New Zealand and Australia, and they say, no way, we're not going to be here under a
barrel.
A lot of people don't know about these things. That is the power of history.
Correct.
When you learn your history, you know where you come from, you can know where you're going to.
Well, I'm glad, and that is a good note for us to agree on, sir, because that's one of the reasons why I raised the issue of Juneteenth and how you would make it relevant to the Barbados environment, because you've brought it right back to where I was trying to get us to go when I talked about the celebration of the period of emancipation, because they would both need education to get people to buy into it. And I figured since we already have a period of emancipation that falls into a crop over period, we have a vehicle to make that transition. Before we take the commercial break, that I'm getting the signal for, let me quickly add this. This is where our calypsonians or creative people take the fore. I can walk through the history of calypso over the years, going as far back as the 1930s, the 1940s and 50s. Attila the Hun and the fellows who, you know, carried the mighty and the they picked their names on purpose. If you listen to the calypsos of the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, even 70s, you would hear the history of the Caribbean, the struggles of our people, the resistance, the names that we associated with. People like to remember Sparrow and, you know, Congo Man. But Kennedy is the man for them, Martin Luther King for president, Dan is the man in the van. Go through the whole thing to, you know, Gabby's boots and one day coming soon. You hear the history and the time, Griner, all of them gone. The whole political spectrum is there. If we've raised a set of entertainers who today see no need to put our history into their music and into their lyrics to teach the next generation. And what we want to teach them is pooch back, bend down, and let me put my hand in your bunker. You know, perhaps they will celebrate Juneteenth. I don't know. 4341-790. Brass Dax, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Hello.
Hello, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Yes, I want to comment on national insurance, but before that, I want to make maybe two other points.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy that spoke just now about, he thought as though we had this struggle for independence. The general just spoke to you?
Yeah, the history. Yeah,
he gave me, from listening to him, he thought as though Mr. Barrow had this struggle, we had this great struggle for independence. But I lived through it. And I'm not, I guess he's younger, and he didn't live through it. But as far as I know, we never had any struggle for independence. I remember reading a letter in the papers at that time, Mr. Johnson, where one white guy said he was not happy with the decline of the status of the white middle class, and therefore he was leaving Barbados. I remember reading a letter like that, and there were guests who felt like that. That didn't matter. The struggle, the main debate I remember was between going into independence and a little late, as you would know, Mr. Johnson, and going alone. Mm-hmm. And I went to all the under 40s meetings, Mr. Henry Ford and all those. Mr. Harrison, John, all they went to all those meetings, and they were debating for they wanted independence and independence in the late as opposed to. So it wasn't a debate and a struggle because our independence was won by outside of Barbados, as I say, the United Nations Decolonization Committee, as you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I remember Boutros Ghali said that the United Nations gave his Arab countries like Kuwait and those their independence. And I also feel that Barbados' independence was won not in Barbados, but outside. The struggle to get rid of colonial rule. India, and as you would know, it was a long story. Anyhow, next thing, the statues, right? I don't know if other people are like me, but I've passed Nelson so many times in my life, and I don't ever remember that he's there.
Because he's like a street lamppost.
But I know. Actually, my mother showed me when I was a little boy.
No, that's the other thing. I keep hearing people saying that my mother showed me. Was it a practice in Barbados for mothers to show Nelson their children?
No.
But people keep saying they were shown by their mother, and I always found that interesting. Because I don't know that there's any other statue that's been shown to children as often as that one.
No, what I'm saying, if you're in town, I mean, if my mother took me to town as a little boy, I mean, I remember going to Queen's Park, she showed me Harrison College, she showed me Queen's College, and all around the place around there at the time. And then she showed me in town. Where, you know, she just showed me these places.
Show you places of interest.
Yeah, I was in Queen's Park with her, and as a little boy, she showed me there, this Harrison College, this Queen's College, down the road, this is walking town, this is Nelson. That type of thing, you know, and I never paid my debt. But I passed it so many times. The only time I remember Nelson is when he's discussed now. And the other statues, too. I mean, I go to the library reasonably often, and I forget that. The right excellent bar is there. I don't ever see him. I pass Bay Street, the statue of Sir Grantley. I don't ever see him. So I don't know the statue to me. I mean, I like what you said just now. You asked about the importance of statues. How many people see them?
I don't know. I don't know.
For me personally, I might be different, but I don't see them. Anyhow, my point has another point before we go any further. I don't know if you heard last night. I heard something very interesting. John Bolton has just written a book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And last night I was surprised to hear that someone said in the book, he said that the President of the United States thought that Finland was in Russia.
Yeah, and that Britain was a power, a nuclear power. I read it online and I laughed.
Yes, we can't believe those. I can't believe those things.
Why? So here's the problem that I have with you can't believe those things. Right?
I believe it though.
Oh, I was about to say it to you, right?
No, I don't believe it.
I smile a lot. I know I was told online, someone sent a WhatsApp message to me telling me that we've changed the way we treat history. I should talk to Dr. Brown, that history is not taught the way it was taught when I was in school. Okay, I take that. Perhaps it is. I will check, I'll find out. More than likely, it has changed. I'm happy if it has. But sir, the things that we are taught here in the Caribbean in our education system, I think it would shock a lot of us if we found out that this wider world that we talk about so often and we learn so much about really know nothing about us or care anything about us at all, you know.
I agree with
you. And there's people who've gone to high school, university, degreed people who sit and make decisions about everything, who can't tell you the difference between Venezuela, Brazil, French Guiana, Dutch Guiana, or British Guiana. They really don't know or don't care.
But no, I found that many Americans have come across. They don't seem to know a lot about geography.
History outside of the U.S.
You're right. I mean, they would know anything about. I don't many of them know anything about Latin America, just in the backyard and so on. But when we did geography, I did geography right through school.
Yeah.
Then of course it is school certificate, whatever. But the thing about it, so you know, I mean, I was shocked when somebody said, "Oh, Finland and Russia."
you would raise your eyebrows, right?
I mean, we were at school. I mean, I believe before I even got fifth form. I mean, you could ask most of us any town, any river, any world, and boys would know where it was.
But that's why I tell you, so it's our history. We were taught that we had to learn as much as we could about, you know, everything in the world. We were told the capitals, the countries.
That's right.
Every time a country changed a name, last time I was on when I was talking about the Middle East, and this guy was talking to me about the Bible and the history behind the Bible. And, you know, in my mind was flashing through all the changes in the names. Because if you read the Bible and you read about Mesopotamia and Crete and Persia and those places exist today with completely different names and completely different boundaries.
Right.
There is no Ceylon anymore. There's no Persia anymore.
Right. You know where it is. You know,
precisely. You know, and you know where to look for the change in name.
You know Mesopotamia is Iraq.
Correct. And Iran is Persia.
Persia, that's right.
And you know that, you know, if you go through you go right down to Rhodesia being changed to Zimbabwe. Because it was part of the things we had to learn.
But that is your follow-ups going on. But I don't think many businesses follow them. Not the national insurance, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to make this point. Now, some years ago, I was shocked to learn that national insurance did have an audited financial statement for over 6 years. Now, national insurance is supposed to be the people's money. I think it was during when Mr. Marshall was the operator, or I was the moderator.
Correct.
And I was surprised to hear when he said it on the, at the time. I could not believe that an institution which is supposed to be taking people's money, this is not a DLP or BLP money, this is the people's money. I personally feel that any Barbadian citizen who has contributed to that fund should be able to walk in any day and pick up an audited statement and to get to understand what is the state of its performance. You don't agree?
So I agree, and I remember going back to you, correct? I think when Mr. Marshall was...
Yes, but he raised it.
He said that one of the things that they would try to do is to bring the books up to date as soon as possible. And I am still very concerned that, according to the Auditor General, we have about 60 SOEs, and only somewhere in the teens, 16 or 17 of them, have produced audited financial statements for a fairly long period. It means we do not know the state of our finances.
But don't, Mr. Johnson, if you look at the Act, right, not all those statutory boards and state enterprises, you know, the Act states clearly that within 6 months of the end of the financial year,
it's supposed to be presented
an audited financial statement department.
So my question is, who is responsible, who's held responsible, and what happens to them when they don't?
I thought the Public Investment Unit in Ministry of Finance would monitor those things and make sure that call right people and tell them, look, this financial statement is due, or some institution, in fact, in the finance or so, we write and just get, make sure that these people provide the statements, or somebody, our own parliament, would ensure, look, there's a law state, so and so. Well, you should have
you
to
break the law.
Where is it? Okay. Where's your financial statement? In fact, I tell some, you know, I remember I used to do corporate loans when I was at work. And I remember one institution, by Ms. Johnson, by the 15th of every month, see, the monthly statement was on my desk, right?
Mm-hmm.
15th of the, 1 month, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the year, the audited financial statement was within 3 months it was in, right? Private sector.
Right? And so this is where publicly traded companies have to present financial statements. They do so because they understand that the public is investing in their company, and the public needs to know what's happening to the money they've invested. Our problem is we don't see government as using our money. We seem to think that government is some, I don't know, benevolent tree of fallen money. And therefore, whether or not, you know, people account for what they do with the money, it really nothing to do with us. When it comes to more taxes, we start to scream.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, you're right, because for example, national insurance is everybody pays national insurance while they're working.
Well, they should.
And people need to know. They should. But everybody needs to know what is the state of the fund.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially now they're paying heavy amounts for unemployment. I mean, people need to know. And I believe if people don't agitate for these things, it will never happen. And I think it is really, really unfortunate.
I think so too, sir. And here's what's more unfortunate, that we continue, administration after administration, government after government, party after party, change of board after change of board, and the incoming board, the incoming chairman, seemingly does not say, excuse me, you handed me Corporation X or Corporation Y. What's the financial status of this corporation so that I know what I can do, what I can't do, how much I owe, to whom I owe it, so that I could start on a sound footing? What is it in the system, sir, that allows us to continue to change board chairman after board chairman, board members after board members, government after government, Auditor General's report after Auditor General's report that we hear the financial statement for Corporation X or Y was not ready at the time. They're 5 years behind, they're 4 years behind, and nothing.
Mr. Johnson, for example, if you were chairman of a, if you had taken over, right? as a private sector company, right? As a private sector company. Good. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you would want to know. And I'm sure you would want to up to date. And our member of the board, right?
I would, which is why I tell you it won't last long. I'll get you off.
The shareholders elected you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're answerable to them. And I'm sure you would. You have. But when people are placed on government boards,
who should know what they're doing, I suppose.
Yeah, well, yes, but they're using political types. So the minister would work for the party and so on and that type of thing. So no wonder that the quality
of see no reason to protect the minister from the accusations that get thrown around by people on calling programs?
Mr. Johnson, some years ago, I remember reading that Bolivia, right? Mm-hmm. If Bolivia has been independent now 200 years, I think they had equally a number of presidents. And there's one institution in Barbados that I always say, well, it must have had as many general managers as Bolivia had presidents.
I like that one.
So you can see why the performance is so wonderful that you do so well, right?
I can see why. Look, yeah. The National Insurance in particular, though, coming back to it.
Mm-hmm.
From time to time, we've been told the number of funds that the National Insurance has. When they go up or down, and which ones are fully stocked, so to speak, and which ones have to be topped up. This COVID environment has caused an upheaval in the finances of Barbados.
Yeah, of course, I agree.
The Prime Minister has, on more than one occasion, I've heard her say, that we have to rejig the estimates and represent a budget and estimates. I have not heard when, and I wait to hear what it will be, because when I read and follow what's happening in the world, I saw today in the newspaper front page story, Senator Rudy Grant saying, you know, even if we open back up the country, the arrivals will be between 2,000 and 3,000 seats per week, as opposed to 20,000. No, that's a significant drop. I also read that, you know, unemployment in Britain going up by 200,000 and some fairly large figures. And that's our captive market.
Right, that's right.
I have not heard what we are doing in those markets in the current environment to try to see if and where we could strategically place our endeavors to get people to travel again, whether it's the upper end market, whether it's the villas, who's out there working on our behalf and what are they doing? Because they're not going to just, everybody who's into tourism will be grabbing at what is available. So people are not going to just get up one morning and say, okay, let's go to the Barbados today. The Barbados is a good place to go. When they're reading about somebody in Nevis, somebody somewhere else, cruise ships just anchored out there, they have to be sold. And the companies that market them are already in the market trying to gee up people to travel in the midst of pandemics. And airlines say we're not testing people. But we seem to always wait and say, well, you know, it will come to us in the fullness of time. Who is out there? What are we doing? How are we doing it? What are the guarantees? What are the semi-guarantees? Who are we promising to pay to fly? Who are we promising to give a little incentive to? What is it? And how much is it costing us? Because until we start to earn, we in ducks' guts.
But then, Mr. Johnson, I want to say this to you. This is the opportune time to really look at how we could carve out some new kind of economy.
Correct.
Because to me, we are educated now, on several occasions, in fact, I mean, 9/11, all types of things we've seen about tourism, that tourism is very subtle. And I mean, it would be stupid to just continue putting your eggs in the tourism basket. So the whole question is, they talk about agriculture, but I never heard a comprehensive. I heard the minister one night talking. He said you put in 750 acres or something like that, and he never outlined any comprehensive plan for agriculture. As such, I mean, I know that one thing that is very important in agriculture is tractor cultivation scheme for farmers. Because I know my father used to be a farmer. And in years ago, in St. James, they had bullying. They used to have a tractor at every agricultural station so that the farmers in the area, you know, could use it for cultivation. Now, they stopped it years ago. They said it was under some. I think they said it at the time IMF program was saying. But I could not understand why you would stop the subsidy for farmers
to be able to get.
No. Because we don't understand. I mean, I found it problem. Then the only thing you think that the IMF had, you've got to look after the U.S. interests. So they want to destroy farming in the Caribbean or wherever so that they could get the market. I think so, really.
Well, but I saw somebody tell me that we're importing fish cakes from Britain into Barbados, and I kind of laughed at them and asked them if they're serious, if we're importing it for visitors. Look, so we have paid lip service to our agriculture because it's cheaper to import than we say it is to produce. There have been studies to show that that's not necessarily true. There have been numerous reports. There's a former minister of government who gave me a list of items, a government-produced list of items that could be substituted locally for produce imported into Barbados and the cost that could be saved, the savings that could result from us doing so. It's the incentive to have it done. The fact that we need to, again, educate and change our people's thinking from agriculture being slaving in the hot sun for a little bit of money for the white man to other ways in which one can produce for one's self other than teething. And you can make a living off of it by not only making your family and your country healthier, and those savings will redound to you because your grandmother will not have chronic diabetes or hypertension. Your children will not be obese at age 8 because you're feeding them corn curls and, you know, chicken stuff with steroids from the United States or from wherever you bring it in because it's cheaper and it tastes nice. So it's a re-education to show how you make yourself richer by using the land productively. Right now, we see the land as being a place to put the house with, you know, the two dogs and the electric fence and the, you know, the cameras. We don't see it as a source of wealth. We still see land as belonging to them white people. We're slaving on it for them to drive boat in big cars while we catching bus and ZR. And maybe moving Nelson will change that thinking. I don't know. Maybe putting Busser there will get us to change. I don't know. Maybe if we change the name of every street, it will change the thinking. I don't know. But we have to start re-educating our people to know that eggs come from a chicken that come from the yard, you know, that gooseberries grow on a tree and they taste just as good as maraschino imported cherries. And you could do the same thing with them. You could stew them and do other things with them and preserve them and sell them and make money. The same way you could import maraschino cherries in a bottle and sell it and put it on top of your drink. Your rum punch is made in Barbados, by the way. Yeah. You put a plastic cherry in it for some reason because it looked nice. So we won't get there. Heaven knows when we will get there. We know we will. The words of wo ya ya, o sibisa. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, my friend. How are you?
You're laughing, oh my God.
How are you, my buddy?
I'm just fine.
You're laughing?
Yeah. I laugh from time to time. We are into, most likely in another 10 years or so, we'll have a lot of different streets and avenues and things named with different names on them based on what is being called for at this point in time. So I hope I would still be around to observe these things.
I mightn't be there. But right. I hope you see for both of us. I mightn't be there.
Right. My main thing, Dennis, now, I don't know if you might not be aware, but a couple of things that I enjoy, politics, law, and Parliament, and the Senate.
I thought it was music.
Music. Dennis, yesterday, as far as I am concerned, was the Ladies' Day in the Senate. I must say the ladies' contributions were on fire yesterday. I enjoy the ladies' contribution in both of the bills yesterday, but especially in the last one. Oh, I thought it was great. Great, great, great. I said, what a night in the Senate. It was fantastic, Dennis. Fantastic.
Uh-huh.
From all corners, from the government benches, from the independent benches, and from the Senate. I mean, from the opposition. I must say first that the young lady from the opposition bench in the boss amendment bill, I thought she made a comment one time about she hoped when she get to 45 that things were there. No disrespect, mate, but I must say her voice sounded like one at 15 years old. Still in fifth form at school.
But, don't do that to us. Ladies are supposed to look young.
Right.
Song,
I
so.
Must say, she was a ton in explaining, you know, the bill, how she saw it. She ended really down on the Auditor General's report with the, on the report with the Water Authority.
Water Authority.
Mm-hmm. And I remember when he said, just give me a minute, that the government was looking for $150 million, $3 million now to have from this boss bill. But they are on accountability for $174 million, I think it was like per year, at Water Authority. Quick, so she snapped that out of there. I think it was $1 billion or something that is adrift, or a million, something like $1.7 billion adrift. I said, whoa, quick. Well, I assume she had the calculator really going when she got to that point. But I really enjoyed her. Quite generally, she don't speak very long in the Senate sometimes, but she's very much to the point. But yesterday she had a very good run, and I thought she was on fire. Then the trade union leader in the second one, at one time I thought she was crying when she was so passionate about the second bill.
Well, it certainly was an enjoyable day for you, sir. From the sound of it, the ladies had you glued. And, perhaps, let's just say the future of the ladies in politics, perhaps looking up.